look at that text with me. We'll stay right there pretty much in 3 John tonight during my part of this. Glad you're here. It's good to see everyone. A lot of familiar faces. And it's been, a few years since I've been here. I think 2 or 3 years. I can't remember exactly when, but I always look forward to coming to Jacksonville to just to see some of you that I don't get to see very often. And I always enjoy being here. Appreciate the good work that you're doing and all the various things that you're involved in that you've been responsible for. It's good to see family, my Aunt Diane and Rosa and just a lot of family. Actually, drove down today, Bailey and I did, drove down from Tennessee because I was at the power lectures and spoke yesterday and got to see some of my other family. Alan was there and some of his kids, and then Wade, of course, was there and his family, and then my mom and dad drove over from Carville. I spent the night with them last night, and then Bailey and I drove down today from there. So last couple of days, I've gotten to see a lot of my extended family that I don't get to see as often as I'd like. But I always look forward to coming to Jacksonville. Appreciate you guys and what you're doing. If you're ever over in the Birmingham area, as occasionally some of you will maybe pass through there, if you're ever there at a church time, I hope you'll stop in and worship with us at Hoover right there off of I-65, 459, about a minute or so, 2 minutes or so from either one of those interstates if you come through Birmingham. So if you haven't stopped in and worshiped with us at Hoover, I'd love for you to come and see us sometime. It'd be a blessing to us for you to stop in and visit. 3 John's going to be my assigned text for the next little bit. As Chance said about Diotrephes, he's one of those Bible characters that we probably don't talk about a whole lot. I don't know if you know much about Diotrephes. If you know anything about him, really, you may hear his word and probably you associate something negative with him. And we'll look at some of the things that John says about him in our study tonight. What hurts churches these days? What tears churches apart? Well, you could answer that question going in a whole lot of different ways. Certainly, there's a place to talk about the struggle that some churches have with what they believe about some things. I mean, you've got that in some churches today, and they got maybe some sort of tendency to teach some things that God doesn't want us teaching, practicing some things maybe that God doesn't want us practicing. That happens in churches. Occasionally, you got to watch out for that, and that's torn some churches apart over the years. And I don't know what the number one thing is. But I'm guessing, just this isn't based on any sort of statistical objective survey, but just on my experience in the church over the past 15, 20 years, talking to folks and spending a lot of time with preachers and elders in different churches, and I would suggest to you that what we're going to talk about tonight is the biggest problem that churches face internally. What that problem is embodied in Diotrephes. Well, let's look at the text. Our main focus is going to be a couple of verses 9 and 10. But we'll actually go back in order to understand who he was and what he did. We've got to read more of it than that. But let's look at verses 9 and 10 first. And then we'll kind of go back and look at some others. Look at verses 9 and 10. 3 John, I wrote to the church, but Diotrephes, who loves to have the preeminence among them, does not receive us. Therefore, if I come, I will call to mind his deeds, which he does, prating against us with malicious words. And not content with that, he himself does not receive the brethren and forbids those who wish to, putting them out of the church. Okay, so that's the story about Diotrephes. That's all we know about him. We don't know anything really about him. He's not mentioned anywhere else in the Bible, only here. We know his name. It probably indicates that he came from a pagan background because the word Diotrephes means the offspring of Zeus, or the firstling of Zeus, like the firstborn of Zeus. Probably has reference to the pagan god Zeus. I mean, there's a chance it could mean God, but most likely it means Zeus. So if that's true, his name was given to him by his parents, and they probably were pagan. So at some point in Diotrephes' life, he has given up his pagan upbringing, and he's become a Christian. Diotrephes is a member of the church. He's a Christian there, wherever John was writing to. We don't know for sure where that was. Probably in Asia Minor, probably somewhere around Ephesus. John spent most of his time ministering to churches in that area. So what did Diotrephes do? Here's what we know about, and this is where we're going to go about our study tonight for the next little while. What we're going to do is, I want you to look at the text with me and see if we can figure out what was going on with Diotrephes. Because before you ever jump to the Jacksonville Church or the Church of Christ here and now in our world, in our century, in our time, you got to try to figure out what was going on in the text. I mean, what does the text, what's it talking about? To whom was it written? I mean, what's John got in mind? What specific situation is he responding to in 3 John before you try to figure out what it means to us today? We're going to get there, but I want you to go with me and think about what's happening here with John. What's happening with Diotrephes? Now, this John who wrote this letter is the John who was one of the apostles. He and James, the brothers, were part of Jesus' inner circle. Peter, James, and John, they were the ones who spent the most time with Christ. Of all the 12, they were his closest ones. They went up to the Mountain of Transfiguration with him in Matthew 17. They went with him further into the Garden of Gethsemane on the night before Jesus' death. Jesus spent a lot of time with James and John and Peter. Now, by the time I think that John wrote this letter, all the other apostles are gone. Peter has most likely been executed. James has certainly been executed. And John is probably the only apostle left of all of them at this point. I think he's writing near the end of the first century, toward the end of the first century. John's writing. Now, he probably wrote all 5 of his letters. He wrote the Gospel of John, and then he wrote the 3 letters, 1st, 2nd, 3rd John, and then he wrote the book of Revelation. Probably wrote them in the same general area, especially 1st, 2nd, and 3rd John. But what's going on here? It's hard to put it together exactly, because we only get some clues. When it says here that I wrote to the church, well, what church is he talking about? Go back to the first part of the chapter. We got to try to figure this out by looking at some clues John gives us. He says the elder. That was the name that John had been called for some time, apparently. He was an elder. He was an older man at this point, probably an elder of a church as well. To the beloved Gaius, whom I love in the truth. In fact, this letter centers around 3 people. Gaius is one. Diotrephes is the second one. And then Demetrius closes out the letter. But he says, I'm writing this letter to the man Gaius, whom I love in the truth. And he said, I want you to be doing well. And then look at what he says in verses 5-8. To Gaius, beloved, you do faithfully whatever you do for the brethren and for strangers who have borne witness of your love before the church. If you send them forward on their journey in a manner worthy of God, you will do well, because they went forth for his name's sake, taking nothing from the Gentiles. We therefore ought to receive such that we may become fellow workers for the truth. Okay, so look and see what he says to Gaius, because this is going to help us understand what he's talking about with Diotrephes. He says, verse 5, you do faithfully, Gaius, you do faithfully whatever you do for the brethren, for the brothers, and for strangers. See, the way John would do his ministry is, he had these emissaries, these missionaries that he would send out. He had a great influence on the churches in Ephesus and that surrounding area. And he would send these men out. They were missionaries, and they would check on churches. They'd preach to churches. And then when they went into an area, they needed somebody to extend hospitality. They couldn't check in at the Super 8, you know. They had to go to a Christian's house, if somebody would accept them. And it was a very important thing, an act of being a Christian in the first century, for you to be hospitable to a traveling missionary, giving him lodging in your home, and also giving him food to eat, taking care of him, and providing for him while he's doing work in that area. And so Gaius was apparently a host of some of these people from John. John had sent them to the area, and Gaius had given them lodging. And so John says, you do faithfully, you take care of these people. They've borne witness, they've come back. See, they would do their trip, they'd come back to John and report on what they had seen. And they reported, hey, Gaius took care of us. Gaius was good to us. He provided us a warm bed to sleep in at night, gave us food, took care of us, all that. They'd come back to John. And so then John writes this letter, probably gives it to Demetrius, who goes, and he takes it back to Gaius. And he says, I appreciate what you did for the people that I sent, these brethren, these strangers, who are strangers to you. Gaius didn't know who they were. All right, then he wants to confirm that. He wants to encourage him in that. Verse 6, if you send them forward on their journey in a manner worthy of God, you'll do well. You know, keep doing that. We need that. Verse 7, because they went forth for his name's sake, taking nothing from the Gentiles or from the pagans. These men didn't go around soliciting money from the unbelievers. They depended on Christians. They weren't going to go and stay with pagans. They weren't going to try to get support from non-believers. They went to the homes of Christians, and they went forth for the name of Christ. We therefore ought to receive such that we may become fellow workers for the truth. You see what he's doing? Gaius, you did a good work. Keep it up, man. Keep it up, because we need people like you. Missionaries depend on it. There's a lesson there for us to learn as far as people who help missionaries, who help gospel preachers, who encourage people, who support people who are preaching the gospel. You're a Gaius. You know, that's what John's saying here. That's a good work, and we've got to have those folks. Now, the opposite end of this, and in order to understand that, we have to look at Gaius. But look at what Diotrephes had done. Either Diotrephes was a member of the church Gaius was, or maybe he was a member of a church in the nearby area. Maybe another church in the same city. The churches were probably kind of small, and they probably had house churches. They had a church that met in this house, and then maybe on the other part of town they had a church who met in that house. And it could be that Diotrephes was a member of another church in that area, another house church. But he says, I wrote to the church, either to the church where Gaius was, if they were members of the same congregation, but Diotrephes, who loves to have the preeminence among them, does not receive us. Okay, so what had Diotrephes done? Look what it says. This phrase is very important. It serves as the, it ties it all together, verse 9, who loves to have the preeminence among them. Some translations put that, in fact, I think the ESV puts it like this, says that he loves to put himself first. He loves to put himself first. In fact, that word loves to have the preeminence. That's all one word. He loves preeminence. He loves to be first. He likes to be the top dog. He loves to be in charge. He loves for people to listen to him and for him to be able to tell people what to do. He loves to be in control. He loves to have the preeminence. In this specific situation, what does that mean? Well, notice what John then goes on to tell us. He says that means several different things. And we're going to talk about what it means to us. But it means this is what Diotrephes did. He does not receive us. He doesn't receive us. The ESV puts that, he doesn't accept our authority, which I think is what John is talking about. He doesn't receive us. He doesn't accept our authority. Apparently what John had done is John had written a letter to the church where Diotrephes was a member, maybe the same church where Gaius was, we don't know. But he wrote a letter. Diotrephes got that letter. We don't have the letter anymore. Could be a reference to 2 John. Probably not, though. Probably a letter that we just don't have. Probably we don't have it because Diotrephes got it. Diotrephes didn't like John and was trying to stymie his ministry, was trying to keep John's message from getting out. Now, just a quick pause to think about what that message was. If you go back and read 2 John, go back and read 1 John, what you'll read there is that John was responding to a movement in churches, apparently, that was trying to deny that Jesus actually came in the flesh. That's what John's talking about in 2 John when he says, if these people come to you and they don't preach the doctrine of Christ, they don't hold to the truth about Jesus Christ, you don't bid them Godspeed, you don't give them a room, you don't extend hospitality to them. But there was this doctrine that was in the church that was starting to deny that Jesus ever had a physical body that would come to fruition later on in the second and third century. But it was this false teaching about the incarnation of Jesus. It could be that Diotrephes subscribed to that teaching. We don't know for sure. It doesn't say. But it could be that he believed that, that he was being pulled away by some of these guys who were teaching this. And so he got the letter from John. And in that letter, John probably asked Diotrephes, asked the church, he sent it with some missionaries, and he asked the church to provide hospitality for them. But you know what Diotrephes did? These guys are from John. I don't agree with John, if it's a doctrinal thing. It could have been doctrinal. He didn't agree with John, what John was teaching, so he wanted to turn them away. It could be he didn't like the authority of John. It could be just that Diotrephes wanted to be in charge, and he didn't like some apostle from over in Ephesus trying to extend his authority to, in Diotrephes' words, probably was something like this. This is my church, and John, I don't care who you are. I don't care if you're an apostle. I don't care if you spent time with Jesus Christ yourself. You don't run my church. Disregarding the apostolic authority of John. Whatever Diotrephes' motive, whether it was doctrinal, could have been. It could have been personal, didn't like John. It could have been this ecclesiastical kind of thing, this argument about who's going to run the church. John, your authority doesn't come here. It could have been that. But whatever the cause, apparently Diotrephes took that letter, and I'm guessing he shredded it. He tore it up. We don't have it. But whatever he did with it, he rejected these people that John sent. Look what it says. He loves to have the preeminence among us. He doesn't receive us. He doesn't accept our authority. In other words, he doesn't understand. He doesn't recognize the fact that I'm an apostle of Christ, that I am teaching the message of Jesus. He doesn't accept that. So he doesn't receive our authority. He doesn't receive us. He doesn't accept our authority. And then he says in verse 10, therefore, if I come, I will call to mind his deeds, which he does. So again, what else was Diotrephes doing? Well, second thing he was doing was prating against us with malicious words. What does someone do who likes to be in charge? Well, he rejects the authority of other people, rejects the authority of those who do have authority. He prates against us with malicious words. That means exactly what you think it means. He was spreading things about John that weren't true. If you want to remain in charge and you've got a threat to your authority, what do? Well, one of the good things you can do, one of the bad things you can do, is to start spreading stuff about them. Make up stuff. I mean, if you don't have morals, make up stuff about them. Spread those things through the church. We don't want John. You know what John did? You know what John said? Make up stuff. That's what Diotrephes is doing. He's prating about with malicious words. Has that ever happened in the church? We'll get there in a minute. Yeah. Yeah. It happens in churches. You got folks who spread gossip and spread things that aren't true in churches today. Remember, started talking earlier. What's the biggest thing threatening the church today? It's Diotrephes. It's exactly what it is. We'll come back to that in a second. But prating against us with malicious words. Then notice this. And not content with that, he himself does not receive the brethren. We already talked about that. John sent the letter by these brethren, these missionaries. They took it to the church. They gave it to Diotrephes, who presumably was one of the leaders in the church. Maybe he was the only leader. Maybe he put himself in, and he was like in a position of the bishop that would later on develop, you know, in churches in the second and third century and on, where you had just one bishop in charge. It may be an early form of that. But anyway, sent that letter by these men. They gave it to Diotrephes. He shredded it. And he said, we're not accepting you guys. You come from John. We don't accept John. Just go back where you came from. We're not giving you a place to stay. We're not supporting your work. We're not feeding you. So he wasn't content with spreading things about John, but he didn't accept the brethren. Back up, that's what Gaius had done. See, John's writing this letter. Hey, Gaius, you've done a good job in accepting these brethren. Diotrephes wouldn't do it. He wouldn't accept them. So he doesn't receive the brethren and forbids those who wish to. Okay, so not only is Diotrephes saying, hey, you're not staying at my house, I'm not helping you, but he kept other people in the church from doing it. Maybe some other people in the church were thinking, hey, Diotrephes, these people come from John. John's an apostle. He's got the authority of Jesus Christ. We need to accept these men that he sent. And Diotrephes said, nuh-uh, it ain't going to happen here, not in this church, not in my church. But what did he do with them? Threaten them. In fact, the text here underlying this, when it forbids those who wish to, putting them out of the church, It's written in a way that probably means this isn't something that didn't just happen once, but it's something that has kept happening. He has kept forbidding them. This is an ongoing thing. And kicking them out of the church, putting them out of the church. If one of these missionaries stays at your house tonight, brother, you know what's going to happen? You're out of the church. Why? Because I run this place. I decide who's in or out. And in my church, none of my members are going to accept these men. Love to have the preeminence. He loved to be in charge. That's who Diotrephes was. That's what he did. Now, it goes on in the chapter, in the letter, short letter. And then he starts talking about Demetrius in verse 12. Probably Demetrius had carried the letter to Gaius. Demetrius has a good testimony from all, from the truth itself, and we also bear witness, and you know that our testimony is true. In other words, Demetrius is another one of these emissaries from John. He's writing to Gaius, and he says, Demetrius is somebody that I want you to extend hospitality to. I want you to put him up. I want you to take care of him. What's John thinking here? I mean, practically speaking, what's he doing? he is trying to have an influence on these churches. And what he's got in one of these churches that he has maybe established, but certainly he's got influence over. They knew him. He had spent time in that area ministering, preaching, spreading the gospel. He's still trying to help these churches to mature and to grow. And one of them has a man in charge. He could have been an elder. We don't know. He could have been a preacher. We don't know. But he's got one man in one of these churches who has decided he doesn't like John for some reason. He's trying to get control of the church, and it seems as if he does have control of it, and he is doing all he can do to keep John's influence from being felt. I think that's the best reconstruction of the events that I can come up with regarding what's happening here. Okay, so what does this mean? What does this mean to us? What does Diotrephes look like today? I started out by asking you some questions about the church. You know, what are the biggest causes of church problems today? If you've been around the church for a little while, you know that the church isn't perfect, not on our side of it. Certainly perfect as the bride of Christ, but it's not perfect when you and I get a hold of it, because we got problems. What does Diotrephes look like in the church today? Diotrephes is the kind of man or woman who decides that he or she likes being in control. Most of us have been around long enough to hear stories. Most of us have been around long enough to experience things in the church that we wish we hadn't experienced, but we have. And it... You know, I've heard various stories and been in the church a while to know and experience some of it. The churches have people just like Diotrephes in them. Sometimes they're in the eldership, where you have a man in an eldership who is willing to go along with the decision of the eldership as long as it's his decision, as long as he agrees with it. Sometimes it happens within the deacons, where you have a man who, from his position, whatever he can do as a deacon in the congregation, to, you know, he's happy. It doesn't matter how things are done, as long as they're done the way he wants them done. You know, we can do it however we want, as long as it's my way, that sort of thing. I'm happy to go along with your opinion, as long as it's mine. So we got people like that who sometimes operate from a position of deacon. It happens sometimes with preachers. It happens with preachers from the bully pulpit, as it were, to get in a position of authority, of authority based on the fact that he gets to stand before congregation quite often, more than anybody else, probably, most churches. Gets to stand before him a lot from the pulpit and the Bible classes, and he can use that position of authority to run things. He probably won't say it out loud, "I run this church, this is my church," wouldn't be that kind of thing, but a preacher can get into a position where he tries to, good men, and good preachers I know don't, you know, they don't do that sort of thing. Good elders don't. Good deacons don't. But it happens sometimes in churches that you've heard about in the brotherhood. It doesn't have to be an elder, a deacon, or a preacher. Sometimes it's a wife. Sometimes it's a woman in the congregation. Somebody was telling me a story a while back about a church that had a woman in it who was trying to run things. And she was running things pretty well. She had her finger in various things that were going on in that congregation, and she would, you know, it happens. It happens. A manipulative kind of person, whether it's a man or a woman, someone who likes to do things his way, her way, to get control of the church. It's happening in churches today, and it hurts churches because it's not the way that God would have us to do things. There's a reason why in churches that are organized according to what you see in the Bible, they have a plurality of elders, right? What? That's not just a coincidence. God didn't. We don't find it in the book of Acts about plurality of elders because it just happened that way. Churches have a plurality of elders so that you've got more than one man in the position of authority, and he himself doesn't have the authority, but rather the eldership itself has the authority in the local church. Presumably to ward off Diotrephes kind of spirit where one man gets in control. Now, I want you to think about something with me for a minute. The spirit of Diotrephes is a spirit that is, it's Jesus talked about it a lot. I mean, let's look at a couple of examples with me. Go to the Gospel of Luke. If you would do that, hold your finger in 3 John, but go with me to the Gospel of Luke, chapter 9. I'd like for you to look at something with me. Luke 9. Loves to have the preeminence. That's what Diotrephes would. Loves to be first. You see, Jesus talked about this a lot. He really did. Luke 9, 46 through 48. These verses will probably be familiar to you. Luke 9, 46. Listen to this. Then a dispute arose among them, among the apostles, okay, as to which of them would be greatest. Jesus, perceiving the thought of their heart, took a little child and set him by him and said to them, whoever receives this little child in my name receives me, and whoever receives me receives him who sent me, for he who is least among you all will be great. So there's this dispute among the disciples, among the apostles, who's the greatest in the kingdom of heaven. And if you were to look in Mark 9, 33 through 37, this is one of my favorite passages to look at when you're talking about the subject, because it is so interesting that the apostles, the 12, the ones who spent more time than anybody else with Jesus Christ in his earthly ministry, they spent all this time. They saw all of his miracles. They heard his teachings. They heard the Sermon on the Mount in person. They saw him walk on water. They saw him raise the dead. They spent all of their time with Jesus for three and a half years. Mark 9, 33 through 37, they're traveling along. It could be what Luke is talking about right here. But they're traveling along. They get to the city, and they get there and they stop. And Jesus says to them, probably you're traveling as most traveling parties with a rabbi. He would walk up front. The traveling band would walk a little bit behind him. But they got to the city, and Jesus turned around and said, what are you guys talking about? Because he knew what they were talking about. What are you guys talking about? What were y'all talking about on the way over here? And they didn't answer him. And you and I wouldn't have answered him either, because we were embarrassed. They were embarrassed because they were arguing about who's the greatest. Can you imagine? Jesus is up there, and there they are, Peter and James and John, and they're huddled up, and Peter's going, James, no, not a chance, man. I'm going to be the greatest in the kingdom of heaven. James, you think you're going to be up there? No, not a chance. And James is arguing with his brother John. And maybe some of the others are in there. Andrew's in there too, arguing with his brother Peter. But they're in there and they're arguing. I'm going to be above you in the kingdom. I'm going to be higher than you. And in fact, in Matthew 20, and this story is told twice. In Matthew 20, it's also told in Mark's account. But Matthew 20, 20 through 28, you've got James. John. You remember who wrote John? Who wrote 3 John? It was John who wrote it. It was John who in Matthew 20, 20 through 28, John and his brother James, if you compare Matthew's account with Mark's account, you come up with this. One of the accounts says James and John went to Jesus. The other account says their mother went to Jesus. And so you piece those two accounts together, and the best explanation is James and John, this was perfectly accurate for them to write it like this, James and John got their mother to go to Jesus. Can you imagine this conversation? Think about it. Okay, because the reason we're thinking about this is, you know what our temptation is? Oh, that bad old Diotrephes, man. He's an awful character. I can't stand Diotrephes. Tore that church apart. Boy, I tell you what, we don't need Diotrepheses in the church today. And I can spot a Diotrephes from a mile away. I've seen some Diotrepheses in the church before. I saw one back in 1974, and I saw one in another church back in 1985. I can see these Diotrepheses, you know. I know exactly what they look like. They really, really hurt the church. But you know what, folks? Please hear this. This is to all of us. The Diotrephes disease, the spirit of Diotrephes, is in every one of us to an extent. All right? Don't dismiss that thought yet. It's in every one of us. I'll come back to that in a second. But Matthew 20, 20 through 28, can you imagine this conversation? James and John are sitting there thinking, okay, we had that argument a few days ago with Peter about who's going to be the greatest in the kingdom. How can we make this happen? All right. And I'm guessing they had the argument with Peter. We don't know they had the argument with Peter, but they had the argument. The disciples were arguing about this. And I'm guessing, you knowing Peter's personality, he had to be right in the middle of it. I mean, could there have been an argument about who's the greatest and Peter not being in on it? Knowing what we know about Peter, he had to be. So James and John are thinking, how in the world can we get a leg up on Peter or the others? And one of them comes up with the idea. Maybe it was John. John says, James, brother, I got an idea. Let's get Mama to ask him. He might listen to Mama, because Jesus had also in his traveling party, he had some women who went along and they supported him financially. They supported the ministry of Jesus. So James and John come up with this bright idea. Maybe he will listen to Mama. And so they got their mother to go to Jesus. And the question was, she said to Jesus, she said, Lord, when you come into your kingdom, will you do something for me? I got two boys I'm very proud of. You know them well, James and John. They've been an important part of your ministry. They've been two-thirds of your inner circle. Spent a lot of time with you. Lord, when you come into your kingdom, will you do something for me? Will you put James on your left hand? And then put John on your right hand? Will you do that? Because I want my sons to have the most important places in the kingdom. And based on the fact that the other text says that James and John went to Jesus, it's probably not talking about two different times. James and John went once and their mother went the other time. It was considered a perfectly accurate way. If James and John made the request and they made it through their mother, then here's how it happened. James and John went to their mother, they got her, they put her up to it, and then she went to Jesus and made the request. I want my sons to be number one, number 1A, number 1B, or number 2A and 2B. I want them to be right up there in the kingdom. You see what we learn from this? We don't need to think about this as something that happens out there somewhere. We need to think about it as something that could happen to every one of us. Because I would challenge you to consider this very personally. And if you find yourself disagreeing with what I'm about to say, I'd urge you to reconsider. Not because I say it, but because this Spirit permeates the New Testament. Even the ones who spent the greatest amount of time with Jesus, they wanted to have the preeminent spot. They wanted it. And you know what? You and I, we like that spot too. We like that spot too. Is there anyone here who's completely immune to the temptation to be in charge? I mean, you know, somebody comes up to you and they say, you know what? I'm not completely happy. I mean, we've got good elders, or we've got good preachers or whatever, however they start it. We got good elders. But you know what? I didn't agree with that decision they made the other day. Now, I'm going to support them on it, you know, but I don't really agree with that. I think if you were there, if you were an elder, you know, I think we see eye to eye on this. And I think you wouldn't let that happen. You know, because, you know, you got something, you got a spark in you. You know, you got some leadership ability, and I really think you could make some changes. You could make something happen, because you got something. You and I are kind of on the same, we agree on this stuff, you know. And you got somebody who comes to you and they start telling you something like that. I wish you had more influence. I wish you had more authority. I wish you got to teach more. I wish you could be an elder. Man, you ought to be a deacon. They ought to listen to you. And you know what you think for a minute? You think, you know what? That's right. Our people ought to listen to me. Because I got some good ideas. You see, what happens in churches is that there's not a single one of us who's completely immune to the temptation to like the praise of people, and to like being in a position where, I got to do some stuff, you know, and I got that happen, and people looked up to me. I was in the position of authority. You tell me if you know a preacher who's completely immune to the acclamations of the people that he preaches to, that he doesn't ever think about it, doesn't ever think about what people say about his sermons, doesn't ever take a moment or two or an hour or two or a year or two of pride in the fact that people say, man, you know what? You're a good preacher. You're really good. You've got a knack for this stuff. You show me a preacher who doesn't find himself enjoying that more than he should. I don't think he's out there. He loves to have the preeminence Diotrephes does. But there's a little bit of Diotrephes in every single one of us. And that's why this is the biggest thing facing the church today. It's because Satan will seize on this part of us, this temptation. I mean, he got in the apostles. He got Peter, James, and John to the other. James and John, you know, getting their mom to go to Jesus. In fact, if you were to, we're not going to take time to do this, but apparently, we're going in Luke 9, but if you were to go to Luke 22, you'll see that if Luke is telling the story chronologically, Luke 22, they have the Last Supper Thursday night. The very last night of Jesus' life before the crucifixion on Friday, and they've had the Last Supper, and Jesus has reinterpreted the elements. He's taken that unleavened bread. He's taken that fruit of the vine, and he says, this now represents my body. This is my blood. The next day, he's going to die. And you know what happens apparently at that supper, after the supper, that very evening? They're arguing about who's the greatest in the kingdom. If you were to combine Luke's account and John's account of the stories, John doesn't tell us about the argument. Luke tells us about the argument at the Last Supper. What John tells us is that they had during the supper, Jesus rose from the table. He went over, he took the outer garment off. He got that basin of water. He wrapped this towel around him like a slave, and he got down on his knees and started washing the feet of the apostles. Remember that? You combine Luke's account and John's account, and here's what I think happened. You got the Last Supper. Jesus is telling them about the death. He's about to suffer. He's about to give his life, his body, his blood for them. They're distracted by the fact that they're trying to figure out, okay, when the kingdom comes, who's going to be in charge? I'm going to be in charge. You're going to be in charge. Who's going to be in charge? And Jesus, he's starting to think, how can I get this lesson across to them? I've spent 3 years with these guys, and they're still arguing about who's the greatest in the kingdom. And he says, okay, I'm going to give them an object lesson. He dresses himself up like a slave and starts washing their feet. And that's why Peter stops him and says, you're not going to wash my feet. You're the Son of God. You're God incarnate. You can't wash my feet. You're becoming a slave. And Jesus says, you don't understand what I'm doing. You'll understand later. Do you see what he's doing? Love to have the preeminence. And Jesus, when one of the very last acts before the cross, he tries to get his own apostles to understand, it's not about you. It's not about you. You know, the biggest threat I think facing us in our local churches, I'm not talking about in the church at large. I'm talking about the unity of the church, the effective testimony of churches in their communities. The biggest threat to that is the fact that Satan wants to get in the hearts of one or two people in our churches and get the spirit of Diotrephes in us so that we can start a little talking behind the scenes. Prating about with malicious gossip, the way he puts it about Diotrephes, but just a little talk, sowing a little bit of discord. You know what, about the elders, or about that sermon, you know, or that Bible class, or whatever. Just sowing that thread of discord. Love to have the preeminence. Satan knows if he can get his foot in the door, if he can get his fingers on the hearts of some of us who, you know, we do like to be noticed. We do like to be appreciated. Who doesn't, right? But if he can get his fingers into our heart And he can start motivating us to start spreading a little bit of strife, a little bit of discord in the local congregation. Oh, he can completely stifle the good work that a congregation is doing if he gets a Diotrephes in the eldership, in the deacons, in the pulpit, if he gets a Diotrephes in the church, whether man or woman, to start seizing authority or undermining the authority of those who have the authority, undermining the eldership, undermining the preaching, then he can do a lot to hurt the church. John Stott says this, quote, "Personal vanity still lies at the root of most dissensions in every local church today." That was written not too many years ago. Personal vanity still lies at the root of most dissensions in the church today, in every local church today. Personal vanity. What's the biggest problem facing the church today? What's the biggest problem facing the local church today? Personal vanity. Pride. I mean, it's been around forever, hadn't it? It's been around since Satan rebelled. That's what it was. That's why he says in 1 Timothy 3 that an elder doesn't need to be a novice lest he fall into the condemnation of the devil. You know, just a couple of practical thoughts. I've really touched on most of this already, but before we run out of time, a couple of practical thoughts for us as Christians. Number one, don't start by looking at other people. Don't try to think about, hey, I know a Diotrephes. I know a Diotrephes very well. Maybe think about another congregation. Oh, yeah, I've heard about Diotrephes over there. Don't start there. Start with yourself. Is there a spirit of Diotrephes within me? There is, to some extent. You may keep, by the power of God, you may keep a good hold on that. And you may keep that throttled. Okay, but there's that spirit there. You've seen it happen too many times in good folks. They get a little, I don't know, they get a hold of your heart. It's pride. It's the greatest weapon Satan's got to wreak havoc in his church, in the Lord's church. But it's that spirit. So don't start by looking at other people. That's the temptation. It's easy. That's Matthew 7. Judge not that you be not judged. It's easy for me to find sin in other folks. A little bit harder to find it in my own heart. Because it's a lot more comfortable if I can find it in you. I don't like it a whole lot to look at it myself. So start right there. Start right at home. Number two. When you consider putting people in positions of leadership, elder, deacon, preacher, position of leadership, teaching a class. When you consider putting people in a position of leadership, this text needs to be in the discussion. You don't want Diotrephes in a position of leadership. That's why he says it in 1 Timothy 3 about the eldership. It's implied in the qualification of deacon. Certainly, it's all over the place and talking in Paul's letters to Timothy and Titus. This humility, don't let this thing get in your church. So in your congregation where you're a member, start with yourself, but be very careful when you're giving people a voice, giving people a position from which they're going to influence people. The greatest threat out there is not doctrinal issues. It is in our hearts. Let me close with Colossians 1:18. All right, we'll be done. Here's the problem. Colossians 1:18. All right, just 30 seconds. We'll be done. Here's the thing. That word loves to have the preeminence. That's the only time it's used in the entire New Testament, in 3 John. The latter part of it, the root part of it, the preeminent part, is also used here in Colossians 1:18. Here it is, talking about Jesus, okay? And here's a problem with Diotrephes. Here's a problem with me. Are you thinking that he's going to be in charge? Colossians 1:18 says, "He is the head of the body. Jesus is the head of the body, the church, who is the beginning, the firstborn from the dead, that in all things he may have the preeminence." You know what the problem is? When I try to put myself, or you try to put yourself on the throne, you know what the problem is? That throne only has room for one person, and that's Jesus. Jesus runs the church. Jesus is in authority. And if I try to scoot him out of the way and get the glory that belongs to him, That's at the root of the gospel. Taking Jesus out of it, He's the one who's preeminent. God help us as Christians to deal with this thing. This is an issue in any congregation. So it's an incipient sometimes. It's just a potential issue. But it is at the root of it. You know, it's in every congregation. You've been so attentive. Thank you so much for letting me come tonight.